like to thank all of you for kindly coming and sharing your wonderful association with us this evening. Today has been a very auspicious day. It is the celebration of the appearance of Sri Shyamananda Goswami. Shyamananda Pandit was one of the most important disciples of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu through disciplic succession. When Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu departed from this world, he entrusted his mission in the noble and auspicious hands of the six Goswamis of Vrindavan. Srila Jiva Goswami personally trained Srinivas Thakur, Narottam Das Thakur, and Shyamananda Pandit to take the essence of Lord Chaitanya's teachings and their writings and broadcast them throughout Bengal and Orissa. Shyamananda preached with such enthusiasm and was constantly absorbed in such deeply pure and high realizations of love of God that he touched the hearts of hundreds and thousands, millions of people and brought them to the lotus feet of the Lord. Tonight is also one of the holiest days for Gaudiya Vaishnavas, because it is the evening of Lord Sri Balaram's Rasa Yatra. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, it describes Lord Balaramji's visit to Vrindavan. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains that after many, many years of being away from Vrindavan, living in Mathura, and then in Dwarka Dham, that Krishna and Balaram could feel within the core of their hearts the great longing of the Brijabasis to meet with them again. At that time, Lord Balaramji approached Sri Krishna and said, "Lord Sri Krishna, it appears that you are acting in a most cruel way. For these many years, you have traveled to so many holy places. You have gone to Hastinapur, you have gone to Mithila, from Mathura to Dwarka. But you have not even once returned to Vrindavan. Are you not grateful for your mother and father, Yashoda and Nanda, who gave their entire lives to serving you, to caring for you and raising you with such love and such devotion? And what about the gopas, your friends? They stand idle with tears in their eyes, unable to even herd their cows or play anymore, longing in feelings of separation from you, simply awaiting for the day when they will see your beautiful form. And the gopis, actually, it is explained that when Krishna left Vrindavan, one of his friends, Sri Dhamma, he said, 'My Lord, if you leave this place, then what is the use of my life? I may as well drown myself in the Jamuna.' And there is a place called Bamsivat." And Krishna said, that I will return very shortly. And Sri Dhamma said, I will be standing here under this tree until you return. For years and years and years and years, Sri Dhamma stood under that tree simply awaiting Krishna's return. It is described in the absence of Krishna and Balaram, the calves no longer cared even to drink the milk of their mothers. The crops didn't even care to grow. The lotus flowers did not even care to blossom. And everyone just stood in trance with tears in their eyes, simply praying for Krishna to return. And the only hope that they had for survival was that they were thinking that Krishna would return by the end of that day. But when the day passed and Krishna still did not return, how much they wept, could not sleep at night, thinking, yes, Krishna will come tomorrow. He has given his promise. It is described that the gopis, they would make garlands, and they would prepare the most tasteful foods that they know Krishna loved most, thinking that he would arrive that night or sometime that day. And when again he did not return, with offerings of love from their heart, they offered those garlands and food to Krishna in their heart. So Lord Balaram was explaining, Krishna, why don't we both go to Vrindavan? I'm ready to go. My chariot is ready. We can go together. Just for a visit. It is true that we have so many responsibilities here in Dwarka, and we cannot be gone for long. But let us give new life to the Brijbasis. At that time, Krishna began to cry. And thinking of the separation that the Vrindavan devotees were feeling for him, he fell unconscious, unable to bear the ecstatic love that was swelling within his heart. But the Yadus, they were very much against Krishna going to Vrindavan. Because they were thinking that if Krishna goes to Brajbhumi, the love of the gopas and the gopis is so great that they will never let Krishna leave again. He will capture them so, they will capture him so much with their loving emotions that he will never come back to Dwarka. Because we all know that our love does not even compare to a drop of the ocean of the residence of Vrindavan. And Krishna was also thinking, this is explained in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita by Sanatana Goswami, that the residents of Vrindavan, they had already attained such a perfection of love of God that in separation from Krishna, they were so united with him in love and devotion that even if he went back, such love could not be improved in any way. They were already in these feelings of Vipralamba Seva, enjoying the highest ras of divine loving exchange. And besides, he was thinking, if I go again, and then if I have to leave, and I tell them that I'll come back, they'll never believe me. I told him I would come back just after killing Kamsa, and now it's been so many decades, almost 100 years, and I haven't returned. If I go there and leave again, they will instantly all die, and I cannot do that to them. So in this way, Lord Shri Krishna wrote a message to the Brijbasis. and he entrusted it to Sri Balaramji. And Lord Balaram, mounting his chariot, went to Vrindavan. And one of Balaram's favorite places in Brajbhumi is a place on the bank of the Jamuna called Ram Ghat. That place is still there today. It's very difficult to get to. You have to walk many, many miles to reach it. But it is one of the truly most holy and auspicious places of Brajbhumi. It was there at Ram Ghat, which is on the bank of the Jamuna just between Vrindavan and Mathura, that Balaram was greeted by all the inhabitants of Vrindavan. It is explained that first he was greeted by Maharaj Nanda and Yashoda. Although factually Balaram was the son of Rohini and Vasudev, still, from the very day of his birth in this world, throughout his whole childhood, he was personally raised by Nanda and Yashoda, who loved him with the same love that they had for their own child, Krishna. Nanda and Yashoda, they placed Balaram on their laps, and they began to weep and cry, soaking him with their tears, and inquiring, how is his welfare? How is Vasudev? How fortunate it is that Kamsa has been killed? And how is Krishna? Does Krishna ever think of his mother and father anymore? We haven't heard from him. We haven't seen him in so long. Now he's a big king, Dwarkanath. Does he ever talk about us? Does he ever think about us? Does he ever consider coming to see us? Will he ever come again? Our thoughts, our hearts, they are only immersed in remembrance of that beautiful child, Sri Krishna. Balaram was greeted by his friends. To his friends, who had by that time grown up, he embraced them, he shook hands with them, he laughed with them, he joked with them. And to those who were junior to him, he gave his respectful blessings. And those who were senior to him, he touched their feet and offered his obeisances. The cowherd boys then met with Balaramji, and they simply related to him of their love and their gratitude that he had returned, and they engaged in so many fraternal loving relationships of laughing and joking and playing, inquiring. Meanwhile, the gopis were simply waiting for the opportunity to speak. And they appealed to Sri Balaramji that our beloved Krishna, how is he faring in the city of Dwarka? That beautiful, opulent city, does he ever think of the simple groves of Vrindavan? Does he ever plan to return? You know, we have given our lives for him and only him. When he does not come, we simply pass our time crying. If only he would come here and accept these garlands that we have made. Dear Lord Balaram, descendant of Dasarha, you know that we would give up everything for Krishna's friendship. Even in great distress, one cannot give up the connection of family members. But although it might be impossible for others, we gave up our fathers, our mothers, our sisters, our relatives. without caring at all about our renunciation. Then all of a sudden Krishna renounced us and went away. He broke off our intimate relationship without any serious consideration and left for a foreign country. The gopis were thinking that Krishna, he can easily live without us, but we cannot live without him. Therefore, we simply spend our days and nights crying, weeping, praying for the day of his return. Lord Balaramji read his message from Krishna to the gopis, and they listened with attentive hearts. And the sweet words of Lord Sri Krishna pacified their mind in sweet love. It is described by the great acharyas that there were two sets of gopis. One were Balaram's gopis and one was Lord Sri Krishna's gopis. Krishna's gopis had a conjugal relationship with him and had an intimate, friendly relationship, fraternal relationship with Balaram. And similarly, Balaram's gopis had a conjugal relationship with Balaramji and had a very intimate, sweet, fraternal relationship with Krishna. So Balaramji completely satisfied the lovers of Sri Krishna by the sweet words that he delivered to them. And then he decided to completely satisfy all the gopis by dancing with his own. And they met at that place of Ramghat. And it was the full moon night of this beautiful month of Chaitra that Balaramji began the beautiful Ras Leela. The Ras Leela has nothing to do with material affection. The Ras Leela is the supreme most expression of pure, unalloyed spiritual love. We're in the process of dancing and singing. The Lord is immersed in toto in satisfying his devotees. And the beautiful gopis, their every smile, their every laugh, their every glance, their every song, every movement of their body in their dance was simply an offering of unalloyed pure love for the pleasure of Shamsundar. Now, when Balaramji was dancing with his gopis, Vishwanath Chakravarti and the other Sridhar Swami and the other acharyas explain that Krishna's gopis were at a little distance in the forest watching Balaram's Ras Leela. And when they saw Balaramji's gopis enjoying so much with Sri Balaramji, they derived the same satisfaction. That is the difference between spiritual relationship and material relationship. Material relationship is selfish. We want to enjoy for ourselves. But in spiritual love, when we see another enjoying God's perfect loving relationships, that gives us greatest pleasure. How these gopis are enjoying the beauty and the love and the dance of Balaram was the fulfillment of the hearts of even the gopis, because they were simply immersed. When they saw Balaram, they were simply immersed in the thought of Krishna. And in their hearts, they were enjoying the same reciprocation. At that time, Varuna, the lord of the ocean, decided to send his own beloved daughter, Varuni, who was the presiding deity of nectar. And she produced this nectar called Varuni, which was like a liquid honey which went oozing from the trees of Vrindavan. And it was so ambrosial in its sweetness that just the smell of it intoxicated Balaram and gopis. And they all went to where that Varuni was manifesting itself or herself, and they began to drink it. And they became intoxicated. But please know, this is nothing like the intoxication of taking drugs or drinking liquor. Because it was the unalloyed, pure love of Varuni Devi that was the intoxicating element within this beverage. And Lord Balaram was intoxicated by the love of his devotee. And the gopis also became intoxicated by the love of his devotee. And Balaramji, sitting under a beautiful tree with his friends, his eyes rolling in ecstatic feelings, he decided that let us drink the pure and fresh waters from Jamuna Devi. And let us have water sports, bathing in her cooling and refreshing stream. So Balaramji ordered Jamuna to come. But Jamuna Devi, she was thinking, Balaram, what kind of request is this? It's such an intoxicated thing that he's expecting me to change my whole flow and change the current to come to him. So she simply ignored him. With Balaramji, he became very angry that she was Jamuna, according to the previous acharyas, is an expansion of the Saki of the name Vishakha Devi. Such an expansion is known as Kalindi. And Kalindi was one of the queens of Krishna in Dwarka, and who was also the daughter of the sun god. And an expansion of that Kalindi appears as the goddess presiding over the Jamuna. It is said that her husband is the ocean. And Balaram, knowing that she is thinking that I am intoxicated like an ordinary man, she is not coming to follow my order, I will have to teach her a good lesson. So with great anger, he took his plow and he began to scratch the earth with his plow, and he told Jamuna that you dare disobey my order, I will drag you to me by force, and I will scratch you into hundreds of streams. At that time, Jamuna Devi, very fearful of the wrath of Balaram, came with folded hands and bowed down and begged forgiveness that I had forgotten your supreme glorious position. And here I have come to surrender at your lotus feet. So she came to him, and they drank her pure waters, and they bathed in her and played in her. And then as they came out, the goddess of fortune herself appeared in the form of Kanti and put a garland around Balaram and decorated him with beautiful jeweled ornaments and sandalwood pulp. And in this way, Lord Sri Balaramji, for 2 full months, he enjoyed the Ras Lila every night with his gopis. Now we should understand that same Balaramji, who has proven himself in this beautiful Leela to be the Supreme Personality of Godhead, In fact, it is explained that the only difference between Krishna and Balaram is that Krishna is bluish like a monsoon rain cloud and Balaram is pure white like a spring rain cloud. Other than that, there is no difference. Vrajanja Nandana Jay Shachi Shuta Hoilo Shay Balarama Hoilo Nitai. Sri Thakur Mahashai Narottam Das explains that the son of the king of Braja, Krishna, appears as the son of Sachi Devi, Mahaprabhu Sri Chaitanya, and that supreme personality of Godhead Balaram, who is the original guru, the original servant of the Lord, who is the supreme enjoyer enjoying service to himself. Balaram is the supreme enjoyer, and his enjoyment is to be enjoyed by serving Krishna, who is none different than himself. So in this way, Krishna is the supreme enjoyer, and Balaram is the supreme servitor. In this way, the one supreme absolute truth, who is without a second, expands himself in so many wonderful ways, simply to enjoy the ecstasy of loving relationship. In fact, every jivatma, we are all also part of Krishna. We are the sacred divine parts of Krishna. And he has expanded himself into all innumerable living entities, just so that through us he can enjoy himself. And himself can enjoy us. In the ultimate perfection of life, the only reality is simply the loving exchange between Krishna and his infinite and infinitesimal expansions. Balaram is Krishna. We are eternally part and parcel of Krishna, meant to eternally be enjoyed by Krishna. And these two brothers, Krishna and Balaram, have descended into this earth as Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda to invite all living entities to come back into this beautiful, loving leela of Vrindavan. By the chanting of the holy names, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, and by service to the Vaishnavas, and hearing the beautiful, glorious pastimes of the Lord, our hearts become cleansed, and we can again, by the mercy of Gaura Nitai, be reinstated in the eternal leela of love, into the supreme abode of Vrindavan. Today is also the celebration of the appearance of that foremost and most illustrious servant of Sri Ramchandra, Sri Hanumanji, Hanuman Jayanti. And what can we say about the glories of Hanuman? They are sung in the Ramayana, Ram Charitamanas. They are sung in the Srimad Bhagavatam. And they have been glorified by all great devotees throughout history. With the short time that we have, I'd like to just share with all of you just a few remembrances of the glories of Hanumanji. Hanuman is the personification of bhakti, the mood of service. There are nine processes of devotional service. Sravana kirtana smarana pandara pada sevana dasyare pujana saki jana atmani vedana. Hearing, chanting, worshipping, remembering, offering puja, becoming friend, surrendering everything, offering prayers, and being the servant, carrying out the orders. And in this particular process is the devotional service, sevanam, carrying out the order of the master. Hanuman is considered to be the supreme personification of this virtue of love. There are two explanations of how Hanumanji appeared, which means that he appears every Treta Yuga with Ram, and sometimes he appears one way and sometimes he appears another way. Sometimes we find within the Vedic scriptures there are different explanations for the same pastime. This is not a contradiction necessarily. There are no contradictions in the scriptures. But we must understand that the Lord and His eternal associates are coming. Paritaranaya sadhunam vinashaya chaduskritam dharma samstapanaradaya sambhavami yuge yuge. Comes millennium after millennium. And sometimes when they appear one way, sometimes in another way. So one explanation is, when Mohini Murti was being chased by Lord Shankar, that Lord Shiva, being so much engrossed in the desire to come and to embrace the beautiful form of Mohini Murti, when he touched her, he lost his shakti, his energy. And when that energy came out of him, Vayu, the wind god, took it and put it in prasad and offered it to Anjana. And in this way, Anjana gave birth to Hanuman. And she is considered, Hanuman is considered both Shiva Putra and Vayu Putra, because he was impregnated by Vayu with the energy of Shiva. Another beautiful story is this, that there was an apsara in the heavenly planets. And one time a great sage who was very unattractive, and he had certain mannerisms which were very humorous to a young girl. So she laughed at him. And he wanted to teach her a lesson. Why, you are laughing at me? You should offer respect to sadhus. You are laughing at me because of my unattractive features? Well, I... Earth on the earth planet as a monkey. She fell at his feet and she said, I'm very sorry, please forgive me. But why are you making me to do like this? He said, all right, I will give you this benediction. You will take birth in the family of monkeys, but you will be the most beautiful and lovely of all ladies. So she took birth, and her name was Anjani. And she was later married to, what was the name of the Keshari? Keshari Raj. He was actually a king of the monkey tribes, Keshari Raj. And many, many times they attempted to have children, but there was no child. So Anjani, they were living at the time at a place called Kishkindha Kshetra. And today this place, Kishkindha Kshetra, is still there for pilgrims to visit. In fact, just A couple years ago, all of our devotees went on a yatra to Kishkindha Kshetra. Within this congregation, we regularly, about three times a year, we go to yatras of different holy places. Sometimes we go to Vrindavan, sometimes we go to Jagannath Puri, sometimes we go to Navadvip, the birthplace of Mahaprabhu Sri Chaitanya, sometimes to Ekachakra, the birthplace of Nityananda Prabhu. Sometimes we have gone to Badrinath, Gangotri, Jamunotri, Rishikesh. Where else have we gone? Sometimes we go to Pandharapur, sometimes to Udupi. Sometimes we go to Pune. Sometimes we come here to Radha Gopinath Temple. But one time we all went to the birthplace of Hanuman. Today it is called Hampi. And in Hampi, such a beautiful, just such a celestial place you have never seen in your life. How many have been there? Raise your hand. Only people that came on our yatra. Nobody else has been. Anyways, you please come next time. There we find the Tungabhadra River curling through beautiful, beautiful mountains of precious stones. And the crest jewel of all of these hills is called Anjana Parvat. It is the actual birthplace of Hanuman. And Anjani, she was performing her tapasya there, worshipping Lord Shiva, in order to get the benediction of having a wonderful and illustrious son. She was so chaste. She was so faithful to her husband. She was so much a humble servant of all sadhus, and actually all living beings, that Lord Shiva was so charmed by her good qualities that he personally appeared before her. And he said, "I am Ashutosh. I will bestow any benediction you ask of me." She said, "I want a son." He said, "I will grant you a son. But not just any son. I want you to be my son, if it pleases you." So Lord Shiva, he told her, "It will very much please me. I will expand myself to become your son." Actually, it is understood by the great acharyas that the expansions of Shiva, there are, 11 rudras. And Hanuman is the 11th rudra, expansion. And so, as one beautiful narration goes, at the time of Lord Ramchandra's, there was that sacrifice on Ram Nomi we explained. Rishyashringa performed a yajna for Dasarath to have a son. And from that, the Mahaprasad, Payasam, was being distributed, half to Kaushalya and the other half to Kaikeyi and Sumitra. At that time, just before Kaikeyi took hers, a large bird came in the sky and picked it up and flew away with her portion. And she was very sad. So Kaushalya and Sumitra, they took part of theirs and gave to Kaikeyi. Meanwhile, this Payasam was being brought by this bird, and he was flying long distance from Ayodhya. He was flying long way. And then Vayu, knowing that this was the grace of Shankar, he took the Payasam from the cup, from the hand of the bird, and brought it and placed it right in the hands
of Anjani. And she ate it. And when she ate it, she became impregnated with Sri Hanumanji. When Hanuman was born, he was a beautiful, beautiful, wonderful little monkey. He was considered the son of both Shiva and Vayu. Most directly Vayu. Although he was an expansion of Shiva, he was considered, because Vayu is the one that actually presented the seed from which he grew. So it is explained that when he was very young, he saw the sun rising, and he thought that it was fruit, and he wanted to eat the fruit. And being the son of Vayu, he was faster than the wind itself. So he leaped, and as he was going, the sun realized that this little baby child actually has the power to devour me. So he became very frightened, and he approached Indra and said, "You are the king of heavens, please protect me." So Indra took his thunderbolt and he struck Hanuman. Little baby Hanuman, who just was innocently going to eat the sun. He struck his chin and cracked his chin. And from this incident, he got the name Hanuman, which means one who has cracked chin. And he fell to the ground and all of his lice symptoms stopped. At that time, Vayu, he became so much worried and afraid that he came down and he took his little baby son and in his arms he began to cry. And he went into a secluded cave. And Vayu, although so sad to see his little baby Hanuman in such a condition, he also became very angry with the demigods because of what they had done to their innocent child. So being in charge of the air, he withdrew all the air in the universe. And everyone, from the lower planets to the higher planets, they all began to suffocate. Because no living being can survive without air, without oxygen. At that time, all the demigods approached Lord Brahma and said, "Brahma, we're all suffocating. Please save us. Vayu has retracted all the air." And Brahma said, "Well, what do you expect? Look at what you have done to his beloved son. We should all go, and with folded palms, we should all beg forgiveness of Hanuman and Vayu, and we should all award Hanumanji our most intimate benedictions." So, headed by Brahma, the chiefs of the demigods all came to that cave in Kishkindhakshetra, and they all offer their obeisances, and Brahma, from his immortal Kamandalu, he sprinkled water on the child, and it came back to life. And Vayu became very happy. And Hanumanji was smiling. And then they began to atone for their offense by offering some seva. This is very significant. When we commit an offense to somebody, anyone can say, "I'm sorry." Actually, I take that back. Most people are too proud to even say, "I'm sorry." They make excuses. "Actually, it wasn't my offense. It was your fault." Or, "It was somebody else's fault." To humble yourself and to beg forgiveness for a mistake that you've made is a glorious virtue. It's the quality of a saintly person. To admit you've made a mistake and beg forgiveness is a strength that all noble persons will love you and respect you for. So all the demigods They're so much greater than us, but they admitted we made a mistake. We begged forgiveness. But our forgiveness, our begging of forgiveness, is not just cheap words. We must do something about it. If we really are sorry, we must offer seva. We must offer service to that person to show them that we're sincere. So they began to offer Hanumanji such benedictions. The list is immeasurable. The sun god Surya said, I will give him a part of my effulgence to always light his body. And I will also, since I am the most learned of the demigods, when he comes to age, I will personally instruct him in the scriptures. And Indra, he said, because I struck him with my thunderbolt, I give him the benediction that every limb in his body is harder and more indestructible than my thunderbolt. And Brahma gave him the benediction. And Brahma gave him the benediction that he would never be defeated in battle. And he could not be killed by anything or anyone. And Vishwakarma gave him benediction that he would have master skills of being able to organize and arrange. And he was given benedictions by the Ashwini Kumars that he would always have perfect topmost health. And he was given benedictions that were too innumerable to explain. But the thing is, Hanumanji knew he had all these benedictions. And he was just a baby. And when he became a little child in his Komara Lila, Bal Lila, you have seen pictures of Bal Hanuman, he was very mischievous. And he was so mischievous because he knew, who could stop me? I have all these benedictions upon me. No one can stop me. I can do anything and get away with it. And he did. When people would bathe in the Tungabhadra River at Kishkindakshetra, he would go to where the rishis and sages were in meditation on the banks of the river. And he would, little jump monkey, he would jump on them in the back. He would jump on their heads. He would pull their beards. He would start eating their scriptures. He would be spitting water on them, splashing water on them, jumping off trees upon them. He would be, when people would go to bathe, he would come down and rip up all their clothes. So when they came out, they were naked and there was no clothes left. He was very mischievous. And he wouldn't listen to anyone. And when the sages would come to, when they would be offering yajna, he would come in the middle of the yajna with a big bucket of water and put it out. And when they'd be trying to chant Vedic hymns, he would start screaming so they couldn't even hear the Vedic hymns. This was his play. So they approached Keshari Raj and Anjana and they said, please, look, do something. It is your duty to discipline your child. He said, we've tried. The more we tell him to be good, the worse he becomes. There's nothing we can do. He's beyond our control because he knows he has all these powers. So, you great sages, rishis, give a benediction to our child. Give the benediction that he forgets all the powers that he has. He forgets all of the benedictions that were given to him. Unless it's a time of crisis where he needs to use them, or unless someone reminds him. So they gave that benediction. And then Hanumanji forgot. And then he became the most perfectly well-behaved little child. He would go before the rishis, Swamiji, how can I serve you? And he would bring them the wood for their yajnas, and he would bring them fruits, and he would bring them food, and he would bring them water, and he would just organize everything so nicely. Anyways, Hanuman grew up in Kishkindha Kshetra. And when he was of age, he approached, on the order of his mother and father, he was supposed to learn the scriptures from Vivaswan. So he approached Vivaswan and said, "Can you teach me Shastra?" He said, "I'm in charge of the sun planet. I'm constantly moving. When do I have time to teach you? I'm constantly on the move in my chariot. You have seen at Konark." Konark is near Jagannath Puri. There is the temple of the chariot of Vivaswan, the sun god. So Hanumanji said, "You go and I will be in front of you, going backward exactly at your speed, listening to you as you speak." So in this way he was educated by Vivaswan. He became most learned, most brilliant, most powerful. He was the most of everything. And most of all, he had the greatest bhakti or devotion. So, the son of Vivaswan was Sugriva. And when Hanuman offered Guru Dakshin to Vivaswan, he said, "Let you always be the servant, the well-wisher and the friend of my son Sugriva, and never betray him." Sometimes you know the story of the battle between Sugriva and Bali. Sometimes people question, why did he take sides with Sugriva and not Bali? It is for this reason. Because he was honorable to his word. So, in Kishkindha, one time a demon attacked. Bali, who was the king, went out to fight this demon, along with his brother Sugriva. And Bali was so powerful that demon, seeing his strength, he ran for his life and he ran into a cave. And Bali went into the cave and he told Sugriva, "You wait here until I come out and guard the entrance, that no more demons can come in." So for weeks and weeks and weeks, he just waited and he heard nothing. And then all of a sudden he heard the ghastly roar of terrible rakshasas. And then he saw blood flowing from the opening of the cave. And he was thinking, Bali is dead. So he put a rock and sealed the cave. But shortly after, Bali came out. And when he came out, he saw that Sugriva had taken his throne and was even taking care of his wife. And Bali became very angry. He thought that Sugriva did this on purpose just to enjoy his position. And he went to kill him. And Sugriva, knowing that he could not compete with Bali, had to run away. And where could he run? There was a particular place just close to Pampa Sarovar named Rishyamukha Mountain. And on that Rishyamukha Mountain, there was a great sage of the name Maharaj Matunga. And one time, a demon attacked, and Bali killed this demon and threw the demon's body a long distance. And the demon's body landed just where Maharaj Matunga and his disciples were performing a yajna. And the blood of that demon got all over them. And this great sage cursed that if that monkey who threw this demon ever comes within even, what was it, 8 miles of this place, he will die. So Sugriva knew that that one place, Rishyamukha Mountain, Bali will never come. So he was living there with his personal minister, Hanuman. And during the time when Ram and Lakshman were searching for Sita, you know that great demon with the 8-mile-long arms, Kabandhu, he was actually a demigod, appearing as a demon because of a curse. But when he was liberated by Ram and Lakshman in his celestial body, he told them, "You go to Pampa Sarovar, it's a beautiful place, and you make allies with Sugriva and Hanuman, and they will help you to find and rescue Sita." So they went to Pampa Sarovar, Ram and Lakshman. They drank the cool, fresh, ambrosial waters. They took their bath and refreshed themselves. There they met that great ascetic lady, Shabari, and sent her back to the spiritual world after she offered such loving devotion to them. Then they began to walk toward Rishyamukha Mountain. Sugriva happened to see them. They were in the guise of ascetics with matted hair and tree bark, but they were holding bows, and they looked like great princes. Sugriva became afraid that perhaps they are the messengers of Bali who've come to kill me. Then he turned to Hanuman, "Please find out who they are." Hanuman said, "I do not believe they can be the messengers of Bali, because no messengers or affiliates of Bali will dare come to Rishyamukha Mountain." So Sugriva ordered Hanuman take the form of a mendicant Brahmin and find out who they are. So Hanuman, by his great mystic power, he transformed his body into that of a very very noble and righteous Brahmin, who was a beggar, a mendicant. And he came before Ram and Lakshman, and when he saw their beauty, his heart began to melt with ecstatic love, and he bowed down to them. And he addressed himself, that, "I am Hanuman. I am actually a monkey, but I'm in the disguise of a Brahmin. And I'm the messenger of Sugriva, and I've come to find out who you are and what you're doing here. You look like the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself. Although you're in the guise of sadhus, you appear to be the most tender, gentle, loving, and heroic princes." At that time, Lakshman, he explained that this is Ram. He is the son of Maharaj Dasarath, the king of Kaushal. And from the kingdom of Ayodhya, he and myself, who is his younger brother Lakshman, have been banished to the forest for 14 long years. We have served 13 years of this sentence. And then the beloved bride, the eternal consort of Ram, has been kidnapped. And we have been told to come here to the Pampa Sarovar and Rishyamukha Mountain to make allies with a great monkey king named Sugriva. At that time, Hanuman fell at the lotus feet of his beloved Ram. It was the first meeting with Ram in this wonderful incarnation. It was the reunion between the eternal servant and his master, Sri Ramchandra. And Hanuman asked Sri Ram, with tears of love in his eyes, his heart beating with emotions, he said, "My dear Ram, you are my worshipable Lord for my whole life. There has never been a moment that I can remember that I was not chanting your holy name. Why is it that I could not recognize you when you first came before me?" And Lord Ramchandra explained that I reveal myself to my devotee according to how he surrenders to me. Krishna says in Gita, "Ye yatamam prabhajyante tamstathaiva bhajamyaham mama vartmanu varatante manushya parata saravasha." That as you surrender unto me, I reveal myself accordingly. Because you came to me in a disguise, not revealing who you really were, therefore I did not reveal to you who I really was. But after you touched my feet, immediately upon touching my feet, your form immediately came back to the original Hanuman. So now I'm ready to explain who I am to you and reveal it. Then Hanumanji said that I am the minister of Sugriva and he is living on Rishimukha mountain. I will bring you to him just now. He said, "I will carry you on my back." And Lakshman and Ram both boarded upon the shoulders of Hanumanji. And as the all-loving, munificent servant of the Lord, he carried them to Sugriva. And then, of course, we know the story, how they became allies and they made their extraordinary plans. And Ram killed Bali and coronated through Lakshman. Sugriva is the king of Kishkinda again. And for 4 months, during the rainy season, it was impossible to search for Sita. So in that holy place of Kishkinda, to this very day, there is a cave called Malyavanta, sometimes called Purashravana. And that is where Ram sat in meditation on his beloved Sita for 4 months, living like a sadhu, simply chanting the names and meditating on Sita Devi, his beloved devotee. And after the 4 months of the rainy season, Lakshman sent Sugriva to remind him that now it is time to look for Sita. And Sugriva sent Hanuman and Angada to go out and bring all the monkey soldiers, millions and millions of monkeys. And after some days, Hanuman and Angada came with innumerable, powerful, powerful monkeys who were all the descendants of the demigods themselves. And Ram told them that I want you to find Sita. And there was all arrangements, which directions each would go. And then Ram took Hanuman confidentially. And he said, "Of all the monkeys, I believe you are the one that will find Sita. When you see her, tell her how much I love her and miss her, and how I am going to come to rescue her without doubt. And if she has any question whether you are really my messenger," he took off his ring and he said, "you give her this ring." It's a long story how the monkey soldiers, they were traveling everywhere, looking throughout the entire planet Earth. And finally, they came across the brother of Jatayu, whose name was Sampat, who was in the form of a large vulture, but he was very old and he had no wings. He was about to eat them. But then they began to chant the names of Ram. And as they were chanting the glories of Ram, they began to describe how his great devotee, Jatayu, died for him, and how Ram was there at his side and performed the last rites for him. Sampata said, "Jatayu is my brother." He explained, "One time We were both, in our playfulness, we were going, flying to the sun. And the sun's rays became so bright that they began to burn my brother Jatayu, so I covered him with my wings, and because of that, my wings were burnt off. Such a devotee. For the benefit of others, he's willing to suffer himself. And he said, and I was told long ago that when the servants of Ram in the form of monkeys come before me, then my wings will grow back. And his wings grew back. And he told him, with my vulture vision, I can see long away, 100 yojanas across the ocean, there is an island called Lanka. In an Ashoka grove, I see Sita sitting under a tree, lamenting in separation from Ram. You will find her there. She has been kidnapped by the great demon Ravana. So then all of the great monkey soldiers came to the place near Rameshwaram. And they looked at the ocean. It's a long way to Sri Lanka. How will we get there? And they all began to describe the capacity of their strength. And one of the monkeys said, I can go one yojana, I can jump, another, I can go two, I can go 10, I can go 20, I can go 30, I can go 40. Angana said, I can make it all the way there, but I do not think I could make it back. And Jambavan, who was the senior most of all of them, he said, actually, Angada, you could make it there and back. You are the son of Bali. But you are our commander-in-chief and our leader, and you have to be with us. He said, when I was young, I could circumambulate the whole world several times. At the time of Vamanadev, when he was taking his first and second footsteps, I was circumambulating his feet very fast in honor and worship of him. But now I am very old, and I cannot jump so far. Meanwhile, everyone was speaking. Hanuman was sitting in complete silence. Why? For two reasons. One is he forgot his own power. Someone had to remind him. And two, it was his natural quality of humility to never boast what he could do. That he would not take any project unless he had the blessings of his seniors. So Jambavan said, Hanuman, you are so quiet, you are not saying anything. But actually, and he began to explain the glorious powers of Hanuman. And when Hanuman heard this, he began to expand in size, and he said, yes, there is nothing I cannot do if I have your blessings. And then he asked for the blessings with all humility of all of his associates and colleagues. He knew that without the blessings of the Vaishnavas, one cannot be successful in one's service to Krishna or Guru. This was his humility. And they all imparted their heartfelt blessings and said, Hanuman, now you go, you jump across the ocean. And Hanuman expanded in a large form. He went atop a mountain. And as he began to jump, when his feet pressed down before he jumped, the mountain began to sink into the ground. And from the mountain, there was so much pressure, liquid gold and silver began to ooze like rivers and streams in all directions. And all the animals began to shriek because they were so much bewildered. What was happening? And when he jumped, the wind that was caused by his jumping tore all the trees and all the vegetation from that mountain to follow along with him. And he began that great and glorious journey to Sri Lanka. What was his purpose? He was the servant of Ram, going to rescue Sita from the hands of the demoniac. And I'd like all of you to listen very carefully of what this means. Sita is the goddess of fortune. Sita is the reservoir of all opulence. And all the fortune of this world, all beauty, all knowledge, all wealth, all fame, all strength, it is all the expansion of Sita. It is not different than Sita. It is her energy. And those who are like Ravana, they want to take the opulence and the energy of God and they want to utilize it for their own personal aggrandizement and sense gratification. To the degree we are taking any of the fortunes or opulences of this world and trying to utilize it for our own purposes, not in connection to the service of Ram, we are like Ravana. And to the degree we are simply trying to take all the opulences and wealth of the world and all the good qualities, everything of the world, and we want to offer it back to Ram, we are like Hanuman. But Sita represents also the highest emblem of love, devotion, and chastity. Hanuman's mission was the service of the Lord, to achieve the feet of Sita, which means to achieve the feet of pure bhakti, pure devotional service. And his journey was very, very instructive. As he was going to find Sita, soaring in the airways across the ocean, Varuna, the lord of the ocean, approached the Menaka mountain, a mountain which was made of solid gold. It is explained, this was in Treta Yuga, that previous mountains were living personalities and they had wings and they could fly. You may not believe, but 200 years ago, they wouldn't believe that an airplane could fly. It is all relative. But we are talking about Treta Yuga, where the mountains were great personalities. But somehow or other, at one time, it is explained that the mountains became so puffed up that they would just fall on cities and destroy everything. So Indra cut off the wings of all the mountains. So Menaka was living under the sea, and she was a mountain of solid gold. And Varuna, the lord of the ocean, said that Hanuman, he's going on a very long journey across the ocean. You should come up and give him a place where he could rest. So the Menaka mountain rose from the ocean and invited Hanuman, please come and rest on me for some time, relax. And Hanuman, he was so fixed in resolute determination to carry out the order of Ram that there was no question of resting, there was no question of comforts, there was no question of enjoyment. But at the same time, he had to honor, because she was offering herself with devotion. So with his hand, he touched just to accept the offering. But then he went on. Now what does this represent? Actually, let me tell the story first, then I will tell what they represent. So he carried on. And then the mother figure for all the Nagas, whose name was Suras, who was sent by the demigods to test Hanuman, she came out of the ocean. And she said to Hanuman that I have been given a benediction by Lord Brahma, that anyone who comes by my way, I will have the power to eat them, and no one could get by me without being devoured. Ah. So she expanded her mouth to eat Hanuman. She expanded it 10 yojanas. A yojana is approximately 8 miles. And then Hanuman expanded himself to 20 yojanas. And then she expanded her mouth to 30, and him to 40. And in this way, finally she expanded her mouth to 100 yojanas. And then Hanuman became as small as a little thumb. And he walked into her mouth, and then he came back out, and he said, "Suras, you have fulfilled your benediction, you have devoured me, now please give me your blessings that I can go rescue Sita." And she was so pleased that she said, "Yes, I have fulfilled, you have very politely caused me to fulfill all my benedictions. Now I bestow blessings on you. Go to Lanka, kill that Ravana and rescue Sita. Bring her back to Ram." So then again he began to fly to Sri Lanka. And another obstacle came in his path. A terrible, terrible demon. Her name was Samika. And she came, she saw Hanuman flying overhead. And she had tantric powers. She was a great sorceress in black magic. And she had such power that she grabbed on. She was in the ocean, and she saw Hanuman way up in the sky. But his shadow was coming over the ocean, so she grabbed on to his shadow. And he could not move. And then, through his shadow, she dragged him down. And she opened her mouth to devour him. And again, he took a tiny little form, like a thumb, and he walked into her mouth, and walked down her throat, and walked through her chest, and went right to her heart, and with his nails, he ripped her heart apart. And then as he came out, she died and fell to the ground, fell into the ocean dead. Then he continued his journey, and he finally reached the island of Sri Lanka, and he waited till dark. And when it was night, he made his form very small, to inconspicuously come into Sri Lanka and to find Sita and to see how formidable the forces of Ravana was, what the dimensions of the city were, so he could report it back to Rams, Sugriva, and Angada. Just as he approached the gate of Lanka, a massive and powerful Rakshasi, whose name was Lankini, she was none other than the presiding deity of Sri Lanka. She stopped him with terrible, rude language. She had said, "What nerve do you have to come here?" He said, "I'm going into Lanka." She said, "You are not, this is Ravana's kingdom, and you are a thief. You have no right to come into Ravana's kingdom. I am the presiding deity, and I am the protectress of Lanka. And you have the nerve to think that you could come in, you criminal. Today I will kill you and devour you." And she approached Hanuman, and she struck him. And Hanuman became very angry. And he took his fist, and he punched her in the chest, and she fell down to the ground vomiting blood. And then she got up, and she began to offer prayers to Hanuman. "That Lord Brahma told me long ago, that when a monkey comes and defeats you, that he is none other than the servant of Ram. And when that time comes, that means that Ravana and all of his Rakshasas will be destroyed and the city of Lanka will be conquered. So now I give you all, I offer my prayers and my obeisances to you, Hanumanji. Now, kindly, with all my blessings and prayers, you go into Lanka and do your glorious seva for Sri Ramchandra. Now let us examine this journey to Lanka. The first obstacle was Menaka, the mountain Menaka. He was trying to do his seva, and a golden mountain appeared and offered him a place to be comfortable, to rest and to enjoy. As you are engaging in devotional service, a great obstacle that you have to watch out for is the tendency for comfort and enjoyment. Gold is the symbol of wealth. Gold is a symbol of material enjoyment. Through this golden mountain, Hanuman was being offered wonderful, wonderful comforts, pleasures. If we become attached to material pleasures or sense enjoyment or even comforts in life, it will completely divert our attention from real devotional service. How did Hanuman overcome this obstacle? Through detachment, through tapasya. The willingness to say no to the comforts, the opulence, and the enjoyments of this world and keep your mind fixed on your service to Guru and Krishna. The Bhagavatam says, dharamasya hibavaragyasya narato yato yopakalpate naratasya karamaitambas kamalabaya hismrita. That when you are engaging in devotional service, many material benefits will come to you. Never accept any of them for your own enjoyment, but they all must be utilized in the service of Krishna. Vyavashayatmaka budhir ekeha kuru nandana bahushaka hinantascha budhayo vyavashayanam. Krishna says in Gita that on this path of devotional service, your aim must be one. You must be resolute in purpose. You cannot be diverted to anything. So yes, so many temptations will come. Temptations of money, temptations of nice home, temptations of nice family, temptations of nice comforts. Oh, let me enjoy for some time. Let me relax for some time. But a sincere devotee will channelize all of these things in God's service and will not deviate from the mission of Guru or Krishna. So we must be very careful of this obstacle of comfortable enjoyment, because it will take us out of the path of bhakti through the process that Hanuman taught us, detachment. If someone offers you something, you honor it, but do not in any way let it disturb your service to Guru and Krishna. And the second obstacle came in the form of suras, which is the obstacle of pride, competitive pride, wanting to show how great you are. Materialists, they are always doing this. But even on the spiritual path, we want to compete with others. I'm a better cook. I'm a better pujari. I'm a better collector. I'm a better preacher. I'm a better devotee. I'm more austere. I can fast very nicely. I can sing very nicely. I can dance very nicely. I know so many slokas. Ah, this idea of trying to make yourself appear better than others. Competitive pride is a great obstacle, which is very difficult to overcome. Suras was getting bigger, Hanuman was getting bigger. Suras was getting bigger, Hanuman was getting bigger. It was competition. Who's bigger? Who's better? Who's greater? How did Hanuman defeat this obstacle, this enemy of pride? There's only one way: through humility. Hanuman became the smallest. You're so big, I'm so small. Huh? He became like as humble in size as our thumb. And with all respect, he walked into her mouth and he came out. And then he offered obeisances. It is only through humility and allowing other people to be bigger and better than us and recognizing that they are bigger and better than us that we can kill this demon of competitive pride in our heart. And then he went on. And the next obstacle was the demon Samika. She's a terrible demon. He was in the air and she grabbed his shadow. She represents envy. What is the nature of an envious person? What is the propensity of envy within our own hearts? The shadow, the form of a person, is light, but the shadow is black, right? It's dark. The nature of envy is to simply cling on to the dark qualities of another. To attach our consciousness to the shadow of another, whatever bad qualities they have. A non-envious person finds great pleasure in seeing the good in others. But an envious person loves to find the faults in others, loves to find the black spots in another person's character, and completely ignore whatever good they have, and just discuss and challenge the faults in other people. Why? Because envious people cannot tolerate somebody being above them. And Samika was in the ocean, and she could not tolerate that Hanuman was way up above her flying a high. So therefore, the nature of envy is you want to tear, you want to drag down people above you by latching on to their bad qualities, to drag them down. By finding faults in those better than you, you try to bring them below you. That is envy. And how expert this demon was. She couldn't tolerate Hanuman's above me. She dragged him down by his shadow. And how did Hanuman defeat her? How did he show us that we can defeat this demon of envy within our own hearts? This great obstacle to devotional service. First of all, again, Hanuman became very small. He became very humble. And then he went right to her heart. Because envy is the heart of all material disease and bondage. And he ripped out her heart. The process of destroying overcoming the obstacle of envy is in the humble service of the Lord. We must very, very, very strictly adhere to the regulative principles of Krishna consciousness. By chanting the holy names, by following the four regulative principles, by living a pure life, this is the means by which we can go right to the heart of the material disease called envy and purify it. Destroy it. And then he continued on, and he met the demoness Lankani. She represents bewilderment. She was such a bewildering propagandist. She was saying that Hanuman was a criminal and a thief and that he should be punished. But Hanuman told her, "What nonsense! You're calling me a criminal and a thief?
You're guarding Ravana, who stole another man's wife, Sita. He's the greatest criminal and thief, and you're protecting her? How dare you say this? And through his harsh words and through his good slap, he brought her to the ground. Similarly, this is a great obstacle to our spiritual lives. You must know the propagation of people in Maya. They think that they're normal, they think that they're good, and they condemn you for surrendering to God. Sometimes your own family members, they say, what is this nonsense? You're becoming so serious about God consciousness. It's not normal. You have your duties to your family. You have your duties to society. You should be enjoying movies. You shouldn't be enjoying television. You should be getting a good job. You should be getting a lot of money. You should be making a good name for yourself. You're crazy. This is not normal life. You are being brainwashed. Lankani, personified through all these people who say these nonsense propagandic things. The fact is, they're brainwashed. The eternal soul is brainwashed to think I'm this body. The eternal soul that is part of Krishna is brainwashed under the illusion and is simply usurping more and more for their own sense enjoyment, not knowing it all belongs to God. So the fact is, when you dedicate yourself to the service of God, most of the society in all ranks is going to criticize you and say that you're foolish, you're crazy, you're brainwashed. But the fact is, they are foolish, crazy, and brainwashed. This city belongs to Lanka. You're a thief. You know what you're saying? You're a thief. You are supporting Ravana. I am on the side of God. And Ravana, how did he overcome this bewildering propaganda of others? By firm conviction. And similarly, if we want to progress in spiritual life, we should know that so many people on all sides, even loved ones, is going to try to dissuade you from the spiritual path. And you have to have firm conviction. You have to have faith. And that faith comes by hearing regularly in the association of devotees. By hearing in the association of devotees regularly, we develop conviction and faith and inner strength where we can conquer all the mayic propaganda of this world and not be bewildered and confused by what people are accusing us of. And in the end, because of Hanuman's conviction and firmness, he actually cleansed the perverted mentality of Lankani and made her a well-wisher and a devotee. And similarly, even those people who are trying to drag you away from devotional life, if you simply remain firm and convinced, you will change them to become glorious, humble devotees. So Hanuman entered Lanka. It's getting late. Should I continue? I will abbreviate. So Sri Hanumanji came into Lanka. And his little form, he was just investigating everything. And he was looking for Sita. Such a beautiful city he saw. All the buildings were made of solid gold, beautiful gardens. It was like a heavenly planet. The fact it is that the brother of Ravana was Kuvera, the treasurer of the demigods, and that Rakshasa was so greedy that he defeated his own brother and took all of his wealth away. Right here in India, we see it all the time amongst wealthy families. They get in fights in the courts and they try to take everything away from each other. Greed destroys the sanctity of any type of love amongst even family members, what to speak of friends and countrymen.
So Ravana had created such a city, Hanuman was just amazed to see. It was more opulent and prosperous than the kingdom of Indra in the heavens. But he was not in any way impressed. He was simply fixed in his consciousness on finding Sita. That was his service. Not to be diverted by anything else. And he was looking in all the windows, and he came to Ravana's palace. And when he looked inside, he saw beautiful, beautiful young ladies in wonderful robes decorated with fine jewels. And they were all sleeping along the bed, and in the bed laid Ravana. When Hanuman saw him, he was thinking, such a powerful personality. But he was disgusted. Even though he had such incredible material opulence, Hanuman was disgusted by it because he knew it was all being used against the desire of Krishna, of Ram. And he saw so many young, beautiful maidens, but he could not recognize any of them according to Ram's description of Sita. So he was searching and searching and searching, and he could not find her anywhere. And he began to think, maybe she drowned in the ocean, or maybe the Rakshasas have eaten her. If I tell Angana and the monkeys this, they will all commit suicide. And how can I tell Ram that? So he continued to search and to search and to search. And ultimately he came to the favorite garden of Ravana. It was called the Ashoka Grove. And there under a tree, he saw the most beautiful, illustrious of all living beings, the most wonderful princess, Sita. She had one golden cloth around her body. She was emaciated from not eating. Tears were flowing from her eyes like the morning dew falling from a lotus petal. And all the while, with a faltering voice, she was chanting the holy names of Ram. Hanuman was hiding in a tree, and all of a sudden he heard noise, and there was Ravana. Sita was surrounded by all Rakshasis. And then Ravana came in a whole procession with many of his queens and many of his consorts and guards. They were holding solid gold torches. And they approached Sita Devi. And Ravana began to speak. He said, I have given you 12 months. He said, I have made a vow. I will not force you to become my bride. But why don't you become my bride? You surrender to me. She said, I can never do that. I am the beloved bride of Ram and only Ram. But Ram is living in the forest, in the jungles. What can he give you? I can make you the queen of all of Lanka, the most opulent place in the entire creation. I will have all my other queens as your maid servants. You can enjoy the finest foods, the freshest garlands, the most beautiful sandalwood pulp upon your body. You can enjoy all my riches, all my wealth, and who is more affluent, who is more powerful, who is greater than I? And if you do not surrender to me, you have 2 months left. I have given you a year. 10 months have gone by. If you do not become my bride within 2 months, I will cut you to pieces and eat you. I will eat your flesh and drink your blood. Sita said, when Ram comes, he will destroy you. Ravana. He remarked that no one can destroy me. I have defeated even Indra. And he became so angry that he took his fist and was about to strike Sita. When Mandodari, the principal queen of Ravana, grabbed his hand and said, "No, Ravana, she's a woman. And besides that, she's such a pale complexion. You have me. Who is more beautiful than I? Let us go and enjoy." So then he told the Rakshasi women, "You torture her until she submits to my will." And Ravana left. And the Rakshasi women were tormenting poor Sita Devi. And when they went away, Hanuman, he jumped from tree to tree until he came to the very tree that Sita was sitting on. And he was thinking that she will think I am a Rakshasa also. How can I convince her that I am Ram's servant? So in a very soft and lovely voice, he began to narrate the glories of Ram and Lakshman. He began to explain how Ram was born in Ayodhya, and how he was traveling with Vishvamitra Muni, and how he broke the bow in Mithila, and how he married Sita Devi, the daughter of the king of Vaideha, and how they lived in Ayodhya and they were banished to the forest, and how Ravana stole Sita, and how Ram was just weeping and crying in separation and traveling everywhere looking, and how he had made alliances with Sugriva the monkey, and how they're all just on the other side of the ocean, and Ram has just sent Hanuman, his messenger, to come and locate where Sita was. And Sita Devi, just before Hanuman came, she was crying out in Ram's name in such desperation. She decided she could not live without him. She took the cord that was binding her hair and she put it around her neck and was about to strangle herself. But hearing the glories of Ram pacified her heart. And then Hanuman came closer and he came right up to Sita. And when Sita saw her, she became very afraid. "You are Ravana! I know you are Ravana! You are trying to trick me. You cannot trick me." And Hanuman again began to explain the glories of Ram, and she became a little pacified. And she said, "If you are actually the messenger of Ram, you tell me certain things about Ram that no one else knows." And then he began to explain the beautiful, beautiful complexion and bodily attributes of Ram and Lakshman. And he said it with such love that Sita's heart was melting. And then Hanuman said that Ram has given me this ring to give to you to prove that I am truly his messenger. And when Sita took that ring, she looked at it just as she was seeing Ram himself. And she pressed it to her heart and began to cry. And she looked at Hanuman and said, "Oh Hanumanji, please bring me to Lord Ram." And he said that I can bring you at this very... She said, "Please bring Ram here." He said, "Ram is just... He will come here very soon and he will kill this Ravana and destroy all these Rakshasas. And he will again reunite with you. In fact, if you want, I can bring you to Ram on this very moment. You just get on my back. In one leap, I'll have you with Ram." She said, "I very much like to do that. But I am a chaste woman, and I cannot be touched by another man. Therefore, I cannot have you take me to Ram. And besides that, I think that it is Ram's desire that he wants to come here and destroy all these Rakshasas himself." Then she took the jewel from her own head and she gave it to Hanumanji and said, "When you return to Ram, please give him this, the gesture of my love, and beg him, please, if he takes much longer, I will not be able to survive." And Hanuman made his promise that Sita Devi, very soon, you will again be in the loving embrace of your beloved Lord, Sri Ramchandra. Then Hanuman wanted to do some mischief. He had done his mission. But devotees, they're never content with just doing what they're supposed to do. They like to do a little more. So he knew that this Ashoka Grove was very dear to Ravana. It was his favorite place in Lanka. So he just started, there were beautiful golden temples and ponds and trees and gardens. He started this with his fists. He was destroying the temples, destroying the houses. He was tearing down the trees. He was making such a tumultuous, they reported it to Ravana that there's a monkey. He's destroying everything in the Ashoka Gardens. Ravana sent 80,000 soldiers to go to kill Hanuman. Kill this crazy monkey. And when the 80,000 soldiers came, all Rakshasas trained to kill with all mystic powers. Just in the gateway over the garden, Hanuman was sitting on the top and his tail was going back and forth. And he looked at them and they said, "Monkey, who are you? We have come to destroy you." He said, "All glories to Ram and Lakshman. All glories to Sugriva. I have come as the messenger of Sri Ram, who will soon conquer Ravana and destroy this whole city of Lanka." So they began to throw spears at him and arrows, and he took an iron bar and he killed all 80,000. The few that survived ran back to Ravana, all bloody and injured, and said, "He has destroyed us all." Then Ravana sent his own son with a whole army. And he was shooting. There was a great battle between Hanuman and the son of Ravana. And ultimately Hanuman grabbed him by the legs, whirled him around in the air 10,000 times and dashed him to the ground and he died. Hariyo. Hanumanji ki jai. And then he sent his most formidable, unconquerable son, Indrajit. And Indrajit came to the Ashoka Garden, marching in on his royal chariot with a massive army. Indrajit was very powerful. He began to fight. He was shooting arrows, but Hanuman was completely undisturbed by even his most mystical arrows. Indrajit realized that this monkey cannot be killed. So the best thing I could do is capture him. So he took a special arrow, which was given to him by Lord Brahma, and he shot it, and it became a rope and bound Hanuman all around, so he could not move. And then the Rakshasas began to beat him and kick him and blaspheme him, and they dragged him to the court of Ravana. And Hanuman was thinking, "This is very nice. Now I get to meet this Ravana face to face." Ravana was furious. "Who are you? What are you doing? Why have you come here? Why have you made such a disturbance?" Hanuman said, "I am the servant and messenger of Sri Ram. And you have stolen his consort Sita, and I demand you on his behalf, if you do not give back Sita immediately, that your whole kingdom, all your armies, all your family, and you yourself will be destroyed. The noose of death is around your neck. Release Sita and save yourself." Ravana became furious. "I am the almighty Ravana. No one can conquer me. This Ram, living in the jungles, living in the forest, what does he compare to my mighty arms?" He became so angry with Hanuman that he ordered his soldiers to kill him. At that time, Vibhishan, who was Ravana's younger brother, who was actually a very pure-hearted and gentle devotee, he said, "Ravana, this is not proper. According to these codes of military, no king should ever kill the messenger of the enemy." It is a great offense. Why don't you just punish him? Whip him, beat him, brand him, scar him, then send him back to Ram. Then Ram will know how really powerful you are. So Ravana said, yes, what you are saying is correct. Monkeys are very attached and proud of their tails. Burn this monkey's tail. Set it on fire. So the Rakshi was all tied up. And the Rakshashas tied his tail with cotton and different cloths. They soaked it with oils and they lit it on fire. And as they lit it on fire, Hanumanji, they decided also to humiliate them. They would drag him through the streets of Lanka. So as they were trying to drag him, Hanuman was thinking, yes, if they drag me through the streets, then I'll get good understanding of all the roads of Lanka, and I'll be able to report this all to our armies of how we can best attack. And after seeing what he wanted to see, he took his tail and he started beating the Rakshashas to death with his tail. Huh? And then he broke the ropes and he jumped on the roof of one of the palaces, and because his tail was burning, that house became engulfed with fire. And then he went to the next roof and the next roof and the next roof, and he was just jumping, and everywhere he jumped, that place would become engulfed with raging fire. In this way, he jumped throughout all of Lanka, and the entire city was in flames. And then he jumped upon the outer wall, and he looked back and saw Lanka burning. And he began to laugh, and with a loud roar, he called out that, I am only the insignificant servant and messenger of Ram, just giving you a little taste of what will happen when Ram himself comes to invade your kingdom. And then he jumped in the ocean and put his tail out from the fire. And then he returned to the ocean side, on the other side. And as he roared, making his landing, all of the monkey soldiers, headed by Angada, Jambavan, Mena, and all the others, they all began to rejoice. Now, before Hanuman left, he told them, you eat fruits, you eat nicely, but do not leave this place. And the reason why he said this is if they would have gone back to Kishkinda to be with Ram, then Hanuman, he knew he would be victorious in finding Sita. He would have to go back and he would get all the credit himself. But he wanted to tell all them first so that they would all go back together and Ram would give them all credit. And they would all have the joy of explaining the report to Ram of their victory. This is the selflessness of a devotee. Even when a devotee does something wonderful, he does not want to enjoy the credit for himself. He wants to give the credit that belongs to him, he wants to give it to others to enjoy. Devotees never like to take credit. They like to give credit. Even if you do something wonderful, oh, it is only because of the love and the blessings and the support of the Vaishnavas, they get all the credit. It is only by the mercy of my guru, he gets all the credit. So Ravana went, and they were all very curious, and they asked him. And he explained the whole story, everything that took place. And they began to jump and to celebrate. And then they all went back to Kishkinda. And they went to the home, to the place called Madhuban. This place is still there. It was the beautiful forest groves of Sugriva. And there, to celebrate the wonderful victory of Hanuman finding Sita and burning Lanka, they all began to jump and to dance. And they were just having a wonderful, wonderful party and festival. And they destroyed the whole garden in the process. And Sugriva became very angry. But because Hanuman did such good work, he forgave him. But evil. And then Ram approached Ramchandraji. and he explained him everything. And then he gave Ram the jewel from the head of Sita. And when Ram saw that jewel, he looked at it as if he was looking at Sita's lovely face. And he pressed it to his heart and began to cry. And then he got up and he embraced Hanumanji. There's a beautiful, wonderful picture, sometimes often Murti's made, of this wonderful, wonderful pastime. When Ram, so grateful and so conquered by the love of the service of Hanuman, he embraced him. And as they embraced each other, they were both completely struck with the ecstasy of love. It is true that the devotee of the Lord is the heart and soul of the Lord, just as the Lord is the heart and soul of his devotee. Because Hanuman, who is the very emblem of devotion, was willing to tolerate all difficulties, was willing to risk his life simply for the pleasure of Ram and Sita. That power of bhakti alone purchases Krishna, purchases Ram. It is only through such bhakti, Krishna says in Gita, that we can know him as he is. The culmination of Hanumanji's life was that moment when Ram embraced him with love. And as he embraced him, Ram told Hanuman that you are my life and soul. Sri Hanumanji has made a vow to Ram that whoever sincerely and attentively chants your holy names, I will always be there to protect him. On this day of Hanuman Jayanti, it's such a wonderful opportunity to meditate on the glorious service in total devotion of Hanuman to his Lord Ram. To follow in his footsteps by making the mission of our Guru our life and soul. By willing to do anything and everything. Hanuman, he didn't even ever think or consider what could be done or what couldn't be done. He knew, because I am Ram's servant doing Ram's will, Ram can do anything through me or anyone he so desires. Shri Hanumanji ki.